Okay, and welcome to another episode of Common Ground. Very interesting one today, Sherry. Sherry Salas is here, of course. And we just want to recap again, Common Ground. Our last couple of shows have been extremely interesting. The one on the death penalty was really good. We had one last week on the death penalty. That created a lot of excitement on social media. And, of course, our Proposition 4 show had over 6,300 viewers.
It's at 63 now. Last
63, right. So that was pretty good. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was just going to add that Ronnie Reed did get a stay.
Did he?
He did.
Wow, because of our show?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure the whole Kim Kardashian listening. And all the other.
Yeah, Kim called in. She's like, hey, Steve, Sherry, how you doing? Thank you so much. So I just want to recap what Common Ground is. What we do is we discuss the issues. I'm sort of like sitting around your coffee table and talking about it. Today's a really good one. We're going to talk about socialism versus capitalism. I mean, socialism has been taken, I don't know, hit in the media, I guess, lately because of Bernie Sanders and AOC.
It's a very popular word.
Right.
Or label, I guess.
And we'll talk about that with the millennials. You know, it seems like it seems to be trending upward with millennials. And then there's a lot of people on the capitalistic side that are trying to teach the younger people what it is, the good things about making a dollar and it's not so bad. So we're going to talk to our guests about that. And we do have two great guests. We have Matt Rinaldi, was a state legislator. I'll tell you a little about himself and his point of view. And Howard Schultze. Thanks, Howard. That's correct.
Mark.
You know, I know a Howard Schultz. And as I was saying it, sorry. Thanks, Mark.
CEO of Sarah.
That's great. And running and a presidential candidate, too,
right?
Schultze
right there.
I know. I had the Schultze and then I threw the Howard in there. Sorry, Mark. And so we're going to start the show. So we'll let Matt start off. Matt, just tell us a little bit about yourself. I'm sure a lot of our audience knows who you are and, you know, your position on this socialism versus capitalism.
Sure. I'm Matt Rinaldi as a Republican state rep in the Texas legislature from 2015 to 2019. I was ranked the most politically conservative Texas legislature by Rice University two sessions in a row. And I'm taking the position of defending capitalism and the con position on socialism.
All right. That was quick. And Mark, go ahead, tell us a little bit about yourself and your position.
Sure. My name is Mark Schulze. And as I put in the bio, I'm a guy just trying to get by. I'm not a politician. I work for a living, have a family, wife, and we have a daughter together. And I am on the side of socialism. Now, I've come kind of full circle on this because I used to look at, was very strongly anarcho-capitalist type of person. But then my work experience and just general life experience has really switch that around and has opened my eyes, and I've ended up joining the Democratic Socialists of America, and I'm on the side of socialism and on a con position of capitalism.
Well, I'll throw it out there. Let's put the elephant in the room right now. So socialism has tried over many centuries, right, to really, of course, with the advent of Russia, and that's where it basically started, I guess, or even before that, Marxism. And it's failed everywhere it's been. So why would we want to go back to that if there's no proven record of its success?
Well, I think in many instances, when you look at it, I don't necessarily know if it's been failed or if it's been necessarily that it's always been nipped at the heels to fail. It's always had outside influences to try and direct it in another direction. I mean, when the Soviet Revolution came about in 1917, it was always nipped at its heels from the white side or the Cossacks. They didn't just lay down and not do anything about it. I think that there has always been outside influences to nip at the heels of it. And I think that socialism has evolved over time. And when I'm looking at it, I'm looking at it as a democratic socialism where the people are in control of it, and it's a democratically elected and run system. It's by the people having the control of the means of production, not an oligarchic top down, where there's a few people on the at the top of the government who dictate everything.
Amazon.
I'm talking about I'm talking about a situation where people who work are the ones who own and operate the means of production, or having a stronger say in that means of production.
What do you think about that, those comments, Matt?
Well, I do appreciate you being a little more clear about you're talking about who owns the means of production. What we often see from democratic socialists are these very vague terms throwing around fairness and saying they're not for central planning, but, you know, and then just kind of we never get a definition as to what it is. So I appreciate that. You know, the problem with socialism is, yes, you say it's failed everywhere it's tried. I agree. I think that's more natural selection on the economic form, because, you know, socialism in its purest form has some issues. Number one, it leads to inefficient allocation of resources. It requires people to be unequal under the law in order to make them equal materially. It requires authoritarianism to enforce. And I think it's the less compassionate, less respective of human rights form of government, even in theory, because under capitalism, what you're saying is I have at the source, you know, ownership of my body when I'm born. Therefore, I have ownership of my labor. I mean, do we agree with that? Do you have ownership
of
your
labor?
Okay,
there you go.
Oh, yeah, perfect.
Yeah, done. Let's go.
Let's go.
If you go, if I have ownership of my labor, then I have the ability to use that labor as I wish and enter into voluntary contracts with other people to use my labor as I wish. Under socialism, I see it effectively as a form of slavery, because the collective gets to determine how I am able to use and trade my labor.
Go ahead, Mark.
But on the flip side, though, is I may be able to sign a contract and it's essentially just be that doesn't mean that I get to be a slave of wages, a wage slave. And you may have that contract to go into, willing to go into a business, but that doesn't give a business the right to have domain over you. In my opinion, it doesn't have domain over you, what you're going to do outside of work, necessarily what your conditions are for your working environment. But do I think that people can freely go work where they want? Yeah, I do. But I don't think that the power of a corporation to have domain over me and my personal life, or the dictates of just the company are, because I'm also a member of that company, I have some interest in that company and what it does. But right now in our current system, we just say in a capitalist market that we go work for a business and they get to make all the decisions.
Well, aren't they putting forward the funds and the risk of using those funds for their business? Shouldn't they have a say on how that business
should work? Of course they should have a say in it, but why shouldn't I have a say in it when I'm working for that business? I mean, it's an interest for me to do well in that business and to have success, but it's not necessarily any interest for the workers for it to close down the facility and move it to Mexico because they can make a higher profit.
Right. So, but isn't it interest of the company that you have an interest in the business, because if they have satisfied employees,
that's what they say, but yeah. They don't ever, to me, that's what they say, but they don't do that, because it's always this people on the top, the board of directors, the management, they're the ones who make the final say in the decision.
So you're talking about large corporations?
Well, yeah, let's take
it. It can be
a
large corporation, it can be a small corporation. I mean, if you have a corporation of two people, they both have interests in that company. Yeah, that person may have gotten the funding. One person may have gotten the funding for the corporation, but that doesn't give them the right to have the dominion over the other person. It's like the other person doesn't count. Like, they don't have any interest in how this corporation is going to be run and what, you know, what's going to be done with the surplus.
Well, I have a question before we go to him,
sure.
Because I think I want to jump into what he's saying. A certain big box entity that happens to play a pretty large role in our country. You know, it's kind of that, like, so let's take the cashier at certain big box. That person supposedly has a vested interest in the company as well. But then our government also has a role within said big box. So then it, you know, and then the suits involved get certain, you know, things also. It's kind of like a big wonky mess. How do we actually determine if it's capitalism? Because ideally, that what happens is we learn that we don't like this particular entity. And as a public, we walk away from it. But if you have the people that are driving it that are way stronger than the people that can just walk away from it, then is it truly capitalism?
Is what is happening in America now truly capitalism? No, I don't think it is. Oh. I mean, I think you have a lot of aspects.
Well, hold on a second. That happened real fast.
Well, no, I don't. I mean, it's a form of corporatism. And mm-hmm. I think if the one thing we can agree on is that government shouldn't be using our tax money to subsidize large corporations, which they
do. You agree with that? Wow, we're hitting a record.
And by the way,
maybe we should be having a different show.
Let's go back to Trump, the pre-show stuff.
Well, now, what you were saying with the workers say in the business, I'm actually on the board of directors of a publicly traded company. I can tell you, one of the, you know, a lot of the people who own our stock are just normal workers who have it in their 401k. They get a say in how to run the business. There are companies that represent the shareholders like ISS that take positions. And to be honest, they're very influential, even with the mutual funds that own a lot of the shares of the company. So what they'll do is if, you know, we pay our corporate executives too much, I'm the compensation committee chair. Mm-hmm. They'll review our compensation system, see if we have say in pay so people can ratify it, the shareholders. So the shareholders do get a vote in the public corporation.
Sure, the shareholders do, but not necessarily the workers.
Well, right. But what I'm saying is that the shareholders are workers. Not some of them are our workers. Some of them are, you may own, if you own a mutual fund, you own Fidelity or Vanguard, you actually indirectly vote on what I'm doing as a board of director. As far as the workers go, the workers do get a say because they can freely move. And I think at will employment is very important. And if it's not at will, I have the ability to contract for long-term employment.
But I think people can freely move. I could quit my employment right now, right this minute. It's not any big deal, but not without anything on the horizon. I mean, there's other things that go into the employment. It's not just the fact of getting a paycheck. It's also the benefits as far as like securing your retirement and health care. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you can do that. You can leave, but what kind of quality of life are you going to have?
Right.
And that's on another level of the socialism. I do believe in single payer healthcare system as far as like the insurance goes. And I think that if people who work should have more freedom and they shouldn't have their healthcare predicated upon by their employment. I don't think that employment.
I don't think healthcare should be connected to
employment. I need you to fist fight, all right? This is not good.
We'll arm wrestle later on if we want. But I mean, I don't think that. And the problem is like if we look at it as, and we want to go to healthcare and we want to go to a pure market for healthcare and for mm-hmm. our health insurance and everything. I agree with Matt again that. But from my point of view, it's always usurped by another entity. Like when we talk about the ACA, it was heavily involved by the insurance companies mm-hmm. and medical companies that had a vested interest to make sure that people didn't truly have freedom to choose. I mean, you can choose your, like you say, you can choose your employment, but I can't choose my health insurance through work. Someone else makes that decision. I have no vote in that.
You technically can't even choose your own doctor to some degree.
And you know, the other thing that goes along with that is that they can change that at any time, your health care. They can choose. I have no say in what they're going to do for health care.
Right. Well, this is, we're not talking about health care.
Right, sure.
One of the things that you're bringing up is the problems with our current system. Mm-hmm. And I, to a large extent, agree with you on that. I agree that health care should not be connected to employment. I agree that you know, the ACA, one of the biggest problems with it is too much of the large corporations had too much influence over what the government chose to do in structuring that. I, however, see that as a problem in implementing capitalism. I mean, in you're talking about government control because government is so much influenced by the big players in our economy. And that's one of the things that I saw, especially
the lobbyists too, right?
Right. Correct. So we almost have this to the extent you allow government control of something, the large corporations, the big actors will always get control of that. Like, look at my father-in-law's a vet, right? There were no veterinary lobbyists, right? Then suddenly states started to regulate veterinary practices more. As soon as the regulation came in, big lobbyists came in and they started to manipulate how the control was given.
Right.
So my whole point is I agree with capitalism. I agree with free markets. I agree with limited government because I've seen how government operates. And when you're talking about collectivism, you're talking about electing people who will represent the collective.
Isn't that the dichotomy right there? Small government versus large governments. Isn't socialism really large government? Government control? They control everything.
Well, I mean, that's one definition of it. And my definition is people, the workers owning the means of production. I'm not here advocating for a state-run capitalism. That's not what that's largely what the Soviet Union was state-run
capitalism. So that is the new socialism now? Is that how it's
for
being
portrayed? For me, it is. And that's the way largely democratic socialists look at it,
too. Democratic socialists, that's what I'm saying.
And that's how it's viewed. And it's, nobody's asking for the government to take over all industry and decide what's going to be made where.
But is that the most responsible solution to a problem? Just because what you're suggesting, like how realistic is...
Well, I want to know who...
But, I mean, if...
That's why I said realistic. Like, I heard what you said, and it makes sense, but I'm playing it out in my head. I'm like, what's that look like? Because I'm not quite sure that's obtainable.
Well, I want to know who enforces it. For example, I mean, it sounds...
What's the plan?
In theory, okay, you know, workers owning mean of production, you're saying... Mm-hmm. You know, I think in practice, even giving that, I think you see an inefficient allocation of resources. I think you see other problems.
Well, I mean, there's all sorts of worker-owned businesses now. Right. They're becoming more and more
popular. But putting that aside, you're saying they own the means of production.
Right.
And individuals can't. I mean, like you can't be an owner of a business, employ others in our current system. So how do you enforce that? That's what I'm saying is who enforces that? You have to do it through.
I didn't say that there. I don't see any role for government and regulation or anything like that. I do believe that there could be better regulation and regulation in that scenario. I just saying that people run. I mean, this thing of like people who work at a business are too stupid to be able to actually make decisions about that business and how they're going to run it. I don't think that's true because, I mean, you look at people who they go to work, but they also have a life outside of work. They run households. They get insurance plans for and they hire somebody to do work. Well, all I'm saying is that those people, let's not – because people want to say, well, I don't know about people actually being in charge of their own business and running their own business as far as like collectively, and it's one person, one vote in that situation. And what I'm saying is that in that scenario also, they're not going to vote against their own self-interest in that like they would in a larger corporation.
I'll let Matt go ahead and respond to that. I know you want to say something.
Well, no, I'm just I mean, people vote against their own self-interest all the time, but you know, in terms of people running a corporation, if that is truly optimal, you can have that managerial setup in capitalism.
Mm-hmm. You can have, and
because you're going to attract better workers, right? If that's truly what people are demanding, you would set up an entity that would be run by the workers and people would want to work there. You could actually pay less of a wage.
Right,
because of that. But it doesn't, I mean,
they don't have that capital already. So it's a little harder to set that up and bring those people together. Because you're starting from scratch.
There's an ugly word called greed that kind of hinders capitalism. You know, like
I think the opposite.
You think the opposite how? When you explain, because
I think socialism is based on greed. I think capitalism.
Oh, I wouldn't argue with that, but I guess I'm saying capitalism because it's what we have basically in America right now, whereas socialism isn't.
If I'm in a capitalist system, I have the right to freely use my labor. And how do I make money in a capitalist system at a base? Is I produce what I'm good at, and I trade that for other people's products, who people who are producing what they're good at. And we just use money as a medium of exchange, right? So how do I make my money? I make my money by serving others and finding the most efficient and best way to do that.
And don't the workers make more money under a capitalistic system because mm-hmm. their value as a good, say you were a great chef and you're working for a company and you know what, your food, everybody's raving about it. And you go to your boss and say, hey, I want a raise. You know, look at these people raving about my food. And he goes, no, you go, okay, well, my value is worth more at Joe's restaurant down the street. I'm going to go there and get $10,000 more. That's the capitalistic way. The way I look at socialism, and I could be wrong, is that you're just part of the cog. You're just part of everybody else. Yeah, you have a right to say what you want to do, like you're mentioning as your job. But you're kind of stuck because now you've got your job responsibilities, your job title, and you're just locked in there. There's no incentive for you to do better.
You can put that in the capitalist system too, and also in a corporation. I mean, the people who do work there and they go in and they do their job every day, they're just a cog in that wheel. I mean, yeah.
But they choose if they want to be the cog at that point. In your system, they really don't.
Yeah, but
no, what I'm saying in my system is they have a say in how that company is run. So they're not just a cog in it. That they own the means of production.
So do they have equity in the company?
Yeah, why not?
So back
to I used to work for an employee-owned company. Well, when we didn't have it was an ESOP company. It was employee-owned. We didn't get any voting shares, but we had an ESOP, and I did get equity in that company, and it did quite well.
Right, but ESOP's part of the capitalistic system, isn't it? To have that option. Mm-hmm.
Well, what you're talking about is a corporate structure, which right. you can freely form in a capitalistic system. However, in a socialist system, that corporate form is effectively mandated, not only to mention the fact that in order to implement it, you would need to effectively do it at gunpoint. You'd be seizing private property. And, you know, it's done. They did it in the UK with some large industries. They've done it in the United States with some industries. But when you do it on such a large scale, I mean, that requires a very effective and strong use of force, which is one of the problems.
I think the biggest problem with capitalism, I don't know, but for real, like I just going by what I see and witness, is back to the greed when you said, okay, you mm-hmm. create this corporation and it's going great and it is successful based off a capitalism model. And then what happens when I say greed is it gets to a certain point and then the owner and or board members and or investors, large investors, decide we don't want to do this anymore. And then they elect to sell said corporation to whoever. When they elect to sell for, you know, a top dollar and walk away to a company that's going to then disband this company, the people that are underneath that have invested because they have shares and have no say, you know, it's going to go away. Meanwhile, sometimes the executives walk away with much larger contracts that they signed going into the situation.
Well, you're talking about a problem. I don't think it's the problem with cap. You're talking about a corporate reorganization.
Well, but I think sometimes that scenario decorated as capitalism.
You're talking about the externalities of what happens in capitalism, yes, when you're finding those economic efficiencies.
But
here's the thing is you're talking about a system that in the end produces greater riches for everybody. So here's the point. If that corporate reorganization results in that corporation producing more efficient and cheaper goods and services for everybody, and if you have an economy at full employment or close mm-hmm. to full employment, those workers will find jobs doing something else. So you have this continuous shuffling around with some low level of unemployment that's just a frictional unemployment where people find new jobs and figure out a new place to go. I mean, that's going to happen in any capitalistic system. But what the final product is, you produce a system that produces greater riches for everybody, even the poorest.
Yeah.
among us. And what we've had in the United States, we have found the greatest engine of eliminating poverty in world history. I mean, we're the first society ever where the poorest among us consume more calories per day than the richest among us. The average person under the poverty line in the United States right now owns their own home with more floor space than the average person in London or Paris. The average person has a vehicle. They have at least one television. They have a DVD player. How do you explain 250 million smartphones in the United States?
I've seen a lot of smartphones in China, though.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't agree. I would not disagree with that. Yeah. But if we're, I guess my comments and questions comes from, if it's truly all holistic, responsible capitalism, I don't know that the gap between this class and that class would be as large.
Well, now you're just talking about income inequality, which I don't think is the relevant thing. I think the relevant thing is how big is the pie, not how is it split.
I actually think it's more of a whole capitalism and socialism fighting against each other. And because we have socialism in forms of our fire departments and police, don't we?
Well, let's see what that works.
That's the other thing I would say, too, is like we have socialist systems to be a model of that in the world. I mean, you talk about the Scandinavian model. Yeah, maybe you can say that they're social democracies.
Like Norway, Sweden.
Oh, yeah.
But they have strong welfare state, social welfare systems, and the income inequality there is not the same as it is here. And they have things like universal health care.
Does that have to do with population?
And they have minimal tuition for universities and for schooling. And I don't understand why we don't want that here. I don't understand why we don't want to have universal health care or universal education that it would be tuition free. I don't know why we don't want that. I don't know how we look at those countries and say they're not a success.
How do you respond to that, Matt?
Well, that isn't a social. I don't look at Scandinavia as a socialism versus capitalism argument. To be honest, Scandinavia, you can make an argument that Scandinavian countries are more capitalist than the United States. If you look at Heritage Foundation's Index of Economic Freedom, every Scandinavian country is in the top 26, 27. Denmark's 11 and I think is higher than the United States right now. They have extremely low corporate taxes, even lower than the United States. I don't think Bernie Sanders wants to lower the corporate
Trump lowered
tax.
It right after
and
but like then
Bernie Sanders
opposed a corporation
it.
Like Amazon who doesn't pay any tax.
Let me go back to Scandinavia. I'm on Scandinavia right now. So Scandinavia is Scandinavia is extremely capitalist. If we're talking about government ownership of the means of production, right? You're talking about Sweden has 90% of wealth is privately owned. The only country that even comes close to like, and that's what the United States is. Norway, I think, is 60% of wealth is government owned or 50 or 60, but that's because they have a government, they have extreme oil resources, right. And they effectively use that. They administer the company like a private company, but it is government owned. But they also have lower taxes, so you get a little situation like Alaska. So I don't really think Scandinavia is, it's more of a welfare state.
Corporate taxes.
No, I'm talking about Norway in terms of, they don't have the taxes that Denmark
has. Like if I went and worked in Norway, my tax rate would be higher than what it is here. I wouldn't have a higher.
Depends on how much you make. If you're middle class, it will. And that's my point with Scandinavia is it's a welfare state where they produce more government services, but it's not government. It's not private. It's not government ownership of the means of production. So we can talk about healthcare. I was just gonna say we can talk about healthcare or university, but we have to talk about the cost of that. Because if what our debate right now is,
but if you're gonna talk about the cost of everything, you talk about the way our government allocates money for costs. They do a tax cut. And they increase the amount of the budget that the military has for $200 billion. And nobody asks, how are they going to pay for that? And we just run into a huge deficit. And then we say we can't pay for anything else. It's like, no, we've decided we want to allocate our resources other in other places, rather than allocating our resources to having like a tuition free college or for having a single payer healthcare system.
Doesn't that support how socialism could be a problem though? Because that $2 billion has to come from somewhere. I mean, our military is a form of socialized, you know, service.
Right, but small. I mean, the spending.
But it's still a good
$750 billion is small.
Context of our budget. You're sitting right here saying that's a lot of money, and where's it coming from? I agree. So why would we do more of this? Where's the money going to come from?
Well, I mean, you can run it through what they call a modern monetary theory, where you run into deficit spending.
But to get a dollar, you have to take a dollar. I don't care where it gets allocated.
When they set the budgets every year, they put the money into account. They don't go out and collect the taxes and then say, here it goes, here you go, here's your money.
Right, it's based on a budget of receiving that income, though. You're talking about just printing more dollars like we've been doing for the last 2 years.
Which is a tax.
Right.
So go ahead, Matt. I know Matt wanted
Two-thirds of our budget right now is Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare. However, in Scandinavia, you know, we were talking about who pays for it, mm-hmm. right? So Scandinavia, actually, the rich pay less of a share of the tax burden. Because the economic growth that's produced from their capitalistic system kind of fuels their welfare state. The average worker can pay 70 to 80% of their income in taxes in Scandinavia. If you make $60,000 a year in Sweden, in Denmark, you're taxed at a 60% tax rate. So if we want to talk about free tuition, free healthcare, that's what you're talking. You got to ask every working class person in the United States if they're willing to pay 60% of their income plus a 25% sales tax like they pay in most Scandinavian countries.
And I guess maybe that's part of the argument is what if not everybody wants their kids to go to college and pay for it?
And college debt is about the same as it is here, even though they have free tuition.
We'd have to have another show on college
debt. They still have college debt, tuition-free college, and the average college debt in Scandinavia is about $19,000 a year. It's 25 here. So you're not even getting what you pay for with the welfare system there.
Yeah, how would we pay for all these items that most socialists want, like free education and free? I mean, they say even if you tax the most wealthy Americans, the 1%, as all their money, you still wouldn't be able to cover all the expenses that they'd want.
But I think that if you have tax rates that you close loopholes, you have things like have been laid out as a wealth tax. And if you close loopholes so that corporations don't hide their money offshore, so that they can be taxed, that there are ways to pay for it that way.
So should people be capped on their salary? So tomorrow Sherry comes up with a great idea for saving the world and cleaning the oxygen in the world. And she's like, I got this great invention. And you know what? I saved $100,000 of my money and I'm investing it. And she works hard by herself for 5 years, and then she hires a couple of people.
Doing without, don't forget.
Then she says, you know what? Now it's 10 years later. I came with a great product for the world, and I'm making $100 million a year. And you go, you shouldn't be able to have that money. It's, you know, we're going to share that money. I don't care how much
you said I would tax it. You make it sound like you hold a gun at her head and say, that $100 million, that's fine.
Well, but if I tax her 70% of her income.
Don't pay your taxes. See when the guys with guns
come. You know, I'm taxing her for her hard work.
No, they're not.
But I'm taxing her for her hard work.
Then I wouldn't pay my taxes.
I just don't understand, you know, and that's why you're here. And I'm glad you're here, Mark, because some of it just seems, it sounds great, you know, kumbaya. But at the end of the day, this reality that comes into play. And I think that human nature is greed. Okay. Unfortunately.
But I think that goes both ways, Steve, because what about that one farm college?
There any compassion though?
Absolutely. I mean, no, human nature is compassion
some
too.
Some people are greedy.
But I'm just saying most people
are passing psychopaths.
Okay. So I could just tell you my personal experience. My company went almost out of business after 9/11. I had nothing. I actually owed the bank personally over $1.5 million. Nobody was coming to my rescue to say, hey, we'll help you out, Steve. I was down to 3 employees. I had to work it all the way back. It took me, you know, 7 years to pay everybody off. And now I've made it successful. So at this point, if I start making a lot of money, should someone say, oh, you know, we're going to tax you more now? I'm like, wait, I paid my dues back in 01, 02. I, you know, nobody gave me anything. So why would I want to say, yeah, you're right, for the benefit of the good, I'm going to give you 60-70% of my income for taxes to help?
Because everybody's doing it. It's not just you. I mean, everyone takes it down to a personal scale that they're the only ones who are going to be paying 60-70%. Where are we actually going to be paying 60-70%?
But I kept my employees during that time, and they got a paycheck because of my hard work.
And during this time.
And not their hard work?
Of course. But exactly. They got paid for their hard work. But I mean,
you're not the only one doing that. Everyone else is going to be paying that 60-70%.
I guess that's where the difference comes in.
Also, at the same time.
I mean, do you think that you're the only one who's going to be doing that?
Doing what?
Paying that 60-70%?
No, in your world, a lot of people will be paying for that.
I know, but that's your question is like, am I going to be. Like, you're the only one who's doing that. I mean, do you want to have a society where people can go to school and get educated and be able to pursue
their chance, that they right? want? Their chance to make more money,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
But that's capitalism.
Let's add to the scenario. During this time that Steve was down,
his
kids had to go to college, and he didn't have the reserve funds that he did at one time because he's having to help his business along. So then his kids have to go out and put themselves through college. And then later on, now Steve's going to be getting taxed for a solution to the higher education, and he'll be paying for other kids. And I really feel like part of the problem is nobody wants to suffer a Band-Aid, ripping of the Band-Aid.
Well, go ahead, Matt. And
I mean, we're inherently selfish. We're inherently greedy. People are. People can also be compassionate. They can be great. However, informing an economic system, I mean, we're talking about fairness, right? So who decides what's fair? Is it me going in the marketplace and negotiating my own contracts, or is it the government enforcing this system that you're talking about, which requires intense government control, wage and price controls, et cetera? And the government's enforcing it. Well, the same people, the same greedy people who run these corporations that you're talking about, are the same people who run the government. I've been in government. You don't want these people running things. First of all, even the good, the well-meaning people are not competent to figure out what you want.
Right.
And the mix of goods and services you want. And the people who aren't, I don't want to give them that much control. At least greed in a corporation can be checked by other corporations competing with that corporation for serving people the best.
Really? So
but
who's,
I don't
who's
think so.
Checking
I mean, if you
Amazon?
Look at,
who's right. checking Jeff Bezos?
I mean, if you look at the airlines,
I don't disagree with monopoly
Jeff Bezos
laws.
Just to move away from the other big box.
But Amazon serves people well. There's no evidence that Amazon is getting out of control with prices or doing predatory pricing or any other anti-competitive behavior.
But is Amazon serving our country?
They're serving millions of people. When you can buy something cheaper.
Oh, come on, y'all.
They don't have a lot of employees?
So yes or no?
A lot of,
wait,
yeah, they are. Absolutely. Anybody who produces a good and service at a low price.
But are the shareholders of Amazon doing their part in our country for what they're getting from our country?
A lot of companies have social responsibility now. They build it into their corporate profile.
What do you mean are they?
They don't pay any taxes.
I don't know their tax profile.
I don't know their tax profile either.
I'm not talking about the individuals.
But I do know they've been losing money. I mean, I do know if you lose money in a particular year, you're not going to pay taxes because you pay tax on profit.
And Amazon did lose money its first 5 or 6 years.
Because they were producing products at low prices designed to grow the company.
I mean, I don't know.
That's government, isn't it? Not really his fault. Right? Is that Amazon's fault that that's the way the government
By the way, here's what I don't like about Amazon, okay? And here's the thing that you want to complain about it? We're going back to the corporate welfare stuff. Do you know the amount of money that local governments have given to Amazon in order to set – it's crazy. Okay, so you pay taxes, you work, and that goes to Amazon. That's wrong.
That's wrong.
Okay? That's completely wrong.
I mean, yeah, completely. I mean, it's the same thing with subsidizing oil companies. I mean, it's, you know, they're profitable companies. Why are we subsidizing?
We shouldn't subsidize any company.
Yeah, exactly. And can we just hold that line? Because we're 10 minutes over.
Can I
ding?
Because I agree.
Yeah, go ahead, ding, and then we'll take it.
I can't.
So we're going to take – we're at 40 minutes here. So we're 10 minutes over. But I didn't want to break our good discussion here. So we're just going to – you guys take a breath for a second. I'm just going to tell about our sponsors. So, Sherry, who is our premier sponsor?
Elevated Roofing.
Wow, very good. So just, you know, Elevated Roofing, great company. I don't know if you know them, but they're in North Texas, but they all go down to Dallas County by you, Matt. Very good roofing company. Very high in ethics. That's what I really, when I was doing my roof after a hailstorm about a year ago, you know, I tried to find a company not that was just trying to sell me a car. You ever see these like roofing companies that you feel like you're buying a car from? These guys are the most ethical people you can meet. They didn't come to me after my hailstorm. I actually went to them as a referral, and they worked with my insurance company. First, my insurance company didn't want to give me the deduct, you know, to take care of my roof, and I had a problem with the deductible, and they took care of it, and they, but everything from the beginning to the end, they did my gutters over, they painted my fences. I mean, really professional. And Sherry loves the fact that we had these, they had these, they came out with like five people at the end, like going on a beach, picking up with those big magnets, picking up the nails off my grass. So it was really cool. Just a great company. If anybody has a problem with their roof, please contact our premier sponsor, Elevated Roofing, at 469-200-0582. That's 469-200-0582. And Sherry's going to tell you about our other sponsor.
Bell and Sparrow. It is a faith-based, woman-founded and women-led organization. They support other women locally, nationally, and in other countries, Haiti. They work in Portland. And what I wanted to bring up in this ad is that they actually work here locally with Genesis Group, which is a highly loved organization in the Dallas area. I didn't want it to just seem like Bell and Sparrow only goes outside of the DFW area. They work to empower women to make their own products, and then they actually help assist to sell the products to help these women have an income.
And it's a good organization. And it kind of relates to this show because they actually don't pay for their own sponsorship. There's a corporation as part of their social responsibility that actually finances this commercial for them. So they stay anonymous and they pay for us to promote Bell and Sparrow. So it's, if you want to give to that organization, great organizations, Bell and Sparrow.
I love their Facebook thing. When you pull it up, it says always open.
That's pretty cool.
I know.
It's Belle and Sparrows, Sparrows.org, bellandsparrows.org. And lastly, our last sponsor is getbloomly.com. You might like this, Matt and Mark. They customize flower arrangements for subscription. Again, this is a young entrepreneur in this area starting out, and he's trying to get his business going. And he meets with clients for subscriptions to their home. So they bring flowers every 2 weeks or whatever. He meets with the clients. He also does Cartier stores. He just got them in Highland Park. So a little shout out to getbloomly.com. Check out their website. So we are back. And we left it really with the Amazon show, I guess, and how they are not.
Did they not deliver something to you? Look, is there a
personal? No, I just know the audience. They deliver regularly.
Especially. How about all those drivers they have now that they're subcontracting to? I mean, they start a whole new industry.
I don't
all
hate
by
that.
Them.
You know, they also do. They enlisted some of our postal system to help deliver last year.
Well, the postal system actually gave them a break that we lost money on there initially, but that's another side story. Yeah, sorry about that. But even look at other companies like Uber. I mean, look at all these new entrepreneurial companies that base themselves on capitalistic theory. How would you support or not support anything like that?
That's a good one because you have the taxis.
How would I support?
I'm just saying your opinion on it.
I think we should look at developing a more robust public infrastructure system. And I'm not so worried about how profitable that system would be because I'm looking at that system that would help improve the productivity for the people who are working to get them to point A to point B in a more efficient manner or a less polluting manner. And, you know, I don't rub against anybody who drives for Uber or for Lyft or anything like that to try and get ahead. I'm not against that.
But the Uber model is pure capitalism because each one of those entities is his own business. So that driver is his own business within the Uber business. So he's his, you know what I'm saying? Right. So,
I mean, as far as the person doing the actual work of doing that. I don't have a problem with them. I do have a little bit problem with Uber because I don't think they're being all that fair to the people who are driving to them. I think that the people who are driving should be able to have more of a cut of what they're doing.
Well, they're grown.
But the thing is, now they're publicly held. Okay. So their whole thing is to maximize the shareholder wealth. And how are you going to do that? You know, how are you going to get that? I mean, you're just going to have more people driving. You know, maybe, but for the most part, I see it's like that also means they don't get as much money as they used to, as far as the percentage, the people who are driving.
So you mean protect the amount of drivers so that they can make a certain income?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that – I don't know. What is it, like 40% or whatever that goes to goes to Uber?
But there's the supply and demand that, you know, Matt, I think, agreed upon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it gets saturated to a point, then, yeah, they're going to get paid less. If there's less drivers, then they're going to get paid more. And the more competition Uber has, the better, because that lifts their salaries. So Lyft gets in there and says, hey, we need drivers to compete with Uber. We're going to pay you 42%.
And then, I'm
not a driver, at least.
Here, I'm gonna tell you, I don't.
You do drive?
I do not drive for Uber because the pay is too low. And I'm quite happy with that choice. That's the freedom that I have to choose. I've always, you know, you're talking about price floors for wages, and I've always thought that was a very heavy-handed use of government, because what right do you have to tell me the terms on which I can sell my labor?
About minimum wage. We had a show on that, by the way.
Yeah, I'm just talking. Yeah, I'm talking about minimum wage or any type of wage or price controls. But what you're talking about right now, if Uber had gone into the marketplace and they knew they would have been that controlled and their profits would have been that limited, there would be no Uber. There'd be no Uber. There'd be no Amazon. There would be no. There would be no smartphones. Think about it. What were phones like in the 70s when we had before the Big Bell breakup? I mean, you had three choices in colors. Now it does everything. You know, capitalism produces the greatest human prosperity in world history. You know, for so long, people lived on, $2 a day, which is now the world extreme poverty line. Now 10% of the world lives for that amount per day. I mean, even in 1990, that number was 30%. And it was all fueled by capitalism.
I guess part of the problem with capitalism would be, let's go back to your dad's veterinary example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was an Uber entity on their own, you know, with no regulation until they got regulated.
Exactly.
And then that changed everything.
That is the problem with capitalism. So more government control.
Because that's what I was trying to get. Are we seeing more of that in certain pockets? And where we see that, are the same group of people being suffering instead of it being kind of the suffering being shared? Is it the same group of people being suffering?
Well, listen, I think, yes, we are seeing more government control of industries, and I think that's bad. But if you're looking at a line between capitalism and socialism, we're really moving on that line towards socialism, because socialism is more government control of industries. Right. Democratic socialism is voters voting in the government who will control the industries. So what we're talking about with the vet clinic, that's a move towards socialism, towards capitalism. So it proves my point.
Yeah. So what do you have to say? Well, yes and no, because there's a level of capitalism, because the people that were able to insist on those regulations, who are they and compelling them to do
that? Yeah, live market.
I was just going to say, I think a lot of times when you see those regulations are written by the people who are in that market already. I don't think it's necessarily written by the people who have an interest to see that animals are treated better. I mean, there might be some of that, but I also see at the same time, we can go back to the ACA when, it was the healthcare industry who wrote the regulations in there, and then they just gave it to the government. The government's okay. I mean, that's what we'll do. It's in their interest. And what I see a lot of times is government being usurped by business interests. I mean, because it's a revolving door. You see it all the time. You see people go from, and I'm not saying Matt here. I'm just trying to agree with them. I talk with my hands. So,
that's fine. You've been pointing so at me a lot.
I just see a lot of that rotational turnover of that, and you see it a lot with the Wall Street crowd too. They're the Keitners of the world, you know, who worked on Wall Street, and then he goes into government, works for the Treasury Secretary. I don't think he had my best interest in mind when he
trying to prevent entry. Trying to prevent entry into the market, right, is what you're saying.
Which is
anti-capitalist.
Right. So what I see both of you saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that government's made the major problem on both sides, and socialism and capitalism. So do we open it up even more?
But you can't have socialism without an extremely strong central government. Because somebody needs to enforce the wage and price controls. When you're going off the market, you're talking about curtailing voluntary transactions. And anytime you do that, a black market's going to form. So the government, and the reason why socialism hasn't worked, is because you need a strong central government to curtail those black market transactions. And when the black market transaction starts going in, listen, if it's luxury goods, then you need less government control. When it starts getting into food and other items like that, you effectively need to jail people who have black markets, or in some communist countries, they executed people who were trading on the black market.
So I should get rid of
that. Then you have government informants. You have everything that happened in the Soviet Union, government informants, gulags, and that's how it happens, because you are curtailing the freedom of people to make choices about their own lives.
Do you want to talk about that, Mark, or you agree with that?
I mean, I see in our system, and if you look at the different systems out there, we curtail the same type of thing. We curtail people. We have black markets for things. We have where we choose certain markets or certain industries to succeed, or certain companies to succeed. Over others. I think what we're looking at there is you're talking about a corruptive system. And I think corruption exists in capitalist markets and it exists in socialist markets. Oh, I'm not going to deny that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Agreed. But I think in the end is like we should be looking at more democracy rather than less democracy. And I think that is the people and not the influence of PACs, corporate interests who have a lot of money. Well,
so can you have successful socialism if you don't have massive campaign reform and or lobbyist reform? I mean,
I agree with that because I do think that money has to be out of politics, in my opinion.
Do you think that's possible?
If it's the will of us to do that, I do think it's possible.
Campaign finance reform, the little that we've done it so far is basically an incumbent protection racket.
Absolutely.
You know why? Because the only people who can get small donations from large groups of people are incumbents. If in Texas we don't have campaign finance limits, you know what? If you want to run for office, all you got to do is find one person with money that believes in you, and you can run for office. Mm-hmm. But if you want to run for Congress, you have to find
a gazillion,
like 500 people will donate $2,000, which I mean, it's very difficult to do.
That's true.
I know.
But I agree. We got to get corporations out of government. But, the same self-interest in socialism, when the government is controlling so much, becomes even larger, because those corporate interests are effectively the government, who can enforce whatever they want unchecked. At least corporations, if they get out of hand, can be checked by competition. But we have to ensure that competition remains open and we're not giving money to companies like Amazon and tilting the scales. It needs to be an open market. We need to enforce prohibition against monopoly power. Nobody's saying that monopoly should be allowed to run unchecked. But aside from that, we want to keep government to a minimum. It's a necessary evil because people are inherently flawed. So we need to keep it to a minimum. And capitalism does that. Socialism is the opposite, where...
I mean, I think in the end that I always see in the capitalist markets and the capitalist system is always there's one who wants to tip the scale in their favor. And if you can run a system where it's completely balanced and fair, you may have something, but I haven't seen that.
But that person's not going away in a capitalist or a socialist market. Mm. So in other words, then we fall back to his problem where people are inherently flawed and you're still going to have that person. That person's going to find another way to penetrate a socialist.
They're going to work for the government.
Yeah, they're going to find a different way to penetrate the socialist plan, right? Am I wrong?
I think that could happen. Maybe. But I don't think it has to happen that way.
Because
if we have the people who are in charge of everything vote the bombs out, right? In my opinion,
it's happened everywhere. It's been tried,
but it kind of has a point. I mean, if you give more control to the average Joe, then maybe that person doesn't have the liberty that he.
Well, power is always. I mean, we have Cuba, Venezuela, all of those were popular revolutions. They were started as democratic revolutions. They turned into something bad because the system itself naturally selects.
Doesn't it lead to corruption?
I don't think so. I mean, I think in the end is they don't have access to things because we surround them and we say, you're not going to get in with any of this stuff. We still have an embargo against Cuba.
We hope. That's what happens.
We do that. We actively do that. We have an embargo against Cuba.
It just seems to me that socialism...
And I think if it was such a bad system, it would have been gotten rid of a long time
ago.
It
is successful for other areas of our country.
I mean, they've made advances in healthcare that we don't have here. And, you know, when it comes to drugs...
Those are public entities, though.
And they're public.
I still pay for it.
Well, you're talking about public goods. So you're talking about goods that would not be performed privately, although fire departments actually were at one point privately run about 100 years ago.
Police officers, too. Right?
But there's a free rider problem on
public libraries? Goods like that. That's not, I mean, it's a service,
They should be producing that.
Oh, okay, Aaron.
Oh my gosh.
They've kind of become obsolete.
Yeah, what do we need?
I mean,
that's because you've never been to the Frisco Library.
Well, yeah, I mean, most of ours are provided on Kindle now. I mean, no, you could bring your Kindle in and take out books on Kindle. It's kind of obsolete.
There's been taxpayer money on that.
Our library kills it in a much different way. I get the argument. It's probably a different conversation.
I guess if you look at it as just reading book standpoint, you have a point there, but. For the other things that are at libraries, like seminars, public learning type of things, and you also have a research component. I mean, there is some research you can't do on Google that you can do in a library, especially like a university type library.
Well, nobody's arguing that public goods shouldn't be provided, but like under capitalism, what we're saying is we should keep the government involvement to a minimum.
Right.
And that's what Thomas Paine said and our founders said, we should keep it to a minimum. In socialism, you're not. You're using the heavy hand of government to enforce the system against people, against their will, and it produces inequality. It produces inequality in that the government people are doing much better than everybody else, and it produces equal misery for everybody in that the pie, the economic pie is smaller.
Right. And I mean, what you're describing, I think, is an oligarchical society with a top-down heavy when you're talking about socialism. When I'm talking about socialism, I'm talking about a democratically run, direct democracy where the people who live and work in the society have a say in the way that society is run. And I don't think that we see that in our system right now. We may elect representatives, but when it comes to our system and the government, they're not going in our interest. And you see that all over. They have been running into a corporate interest or moneyed interest. And, and then they will say that they got there through capitalism and their hard work. And I see them a lot of times I see those people have been there and been put in there because of who they know and not what they know.
Well, Matt, what do you see the recent stem of millennials saying, is it that they don't really understand or what is this? They have this love all of a sudden. I mean, there were some polls that came out that
really
said, like 45% of millennials would like to see the country go towards socialism or democratic socialism. So what do you think that's coming from?
I think a lot of people, I think it's coming from our education system, which presents a more favorable view of socialism than it probably even did in the Eastern Bloc countries during communism. Because then they had to present the positive view, but you could kind of tell the teachers weren't that into it. Now, I think at a university, everyone's very, the teachers are very excited about it. Secondly, I don't think they really know the definition of it. I think when you pull them on what socialism means, I think you get vague notions of fairness, they don't know what it means.
I don't, in my opinion, based off what he's saying, I don't know that it's that they love socialism, but they just know that they don't necessarily appreciate some of what they're seeing now, which goes to the whole.
I think it's more governmental, they don't like.
Yes, and they don't like what they're seeing right now, and since it's supposedly capitalism model, then, i.e., I'm going to go to the socialism model.
Well, and I think that what their experiences showed is also an influence on that. I mean, if they're coming out and they're coming out of school and they get into a great job and they can, afford a house and go into a house and not have to go and they didn't have to pile up a bunch of debt.
That's true.
They don't want houses. Sorry, I'm
sorry. Yeah, I mean,
they want subsidized apartments with a free car and a phone.
And I'm just saying that, they look at that and then they're saddled with debt and their opportunities, it doesn't pay for them. So I think they're looking for a different system. I think that the promises that they were to have an American dream to be able to pursue things, I don't think that they're seeing that. And I don't think they're necessarily lazy, because I see every generation that comes up is the next generation is the lazy generation. I'm a Generation X. Baby boomers thought we were lazy, and everyone thinks that the millennials are lazy. And I think if you went 200 years back, you'd see the same thing.
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk about was you brought up a lot of class talk, workers, everything else, and talking about the American dream. Capitalism, the American dream, despite some of its flaws, which I think mostly come from government involvement, is alive and well. In the United States, if you have a child born today, they have a 50% chance of being in the top 10% of income earners at some point in their life. You see tremendous mobility. Absolutely.
Yeah, but it would depend on what they want to do. I mean, they have the option.
No, it doesn't. I'm talking about all else equal. First born today, they have a 50% chance of being in the top 10% of income earners at some point in their life. You have 27% turnover among the top 1%. So what you're seeing is if you're in the bottom quintile, you're seeing about 60% of people eventually get out of the bottom quintile. So what you're seeing is, children, go to school, graduate college. They might start in the lowest income group, but they're moving. They're mobile. This isn't a stagnant group. This is people moving at points in their lives through every income group. So it shows the American dream's alive and well. If you're in the lowest income group now, you have a very good chance of being a better than average chance of being in a higher income group later.
Someone who graduates
college in San Francisco and looks at what their options are for that area, they're not seeing that. Yeah, maybe they know they have to start out at the bottom, but do they see themselves getting into a house that's, what is the average, $3,000 to $4,000 a month?
Because of government permitting, because I have to put $20,000 in solar panels on my house if I build a new house now in California, because the permitting is ridiculous, so the supply is low. This is all due to government involvement in California.
Well, and then there's also the NIMBY stuff, too, where they don't want to build up. And that's not necessarily just the government. It's the people in the neighborhoods, too, that live in a nicer neighborhood. They're like, I don't want multifamily near me.
Which is effectively enforced by the government.
Well, then that isn't.
But it's the interests of some moneyed interests and not necessarily the people that live in the area.
Because the governments are corrupted by money interests, because governments are corrupted by money. So the government needs to be small and less powerful.
A good place to end, and we're over an hour. So we are going to thank our guests, Mark Schulze and Matt Rinaldi. Thank you much for coming in.
You
guys presented very well. I think it was a really good discussion. Any closing thoughts that you have, Sherry, before we wrap it up?
I do not.
Okay, so anybody's listening to the show, we will not have a show next week due to Thanksgiving, but we should be back the week after. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Common Ground today. Again, socialism versus capitalism, very great discussion. Again, thank you to our guests. Thank you very much. And take care. Everybody have a good day.
Take it easy.
Yep.
Great job.
Matt, it was very good meeting you. Appreciate it.
Okay, I got to tell you, that